Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, we'll bring you the Dummy's Guide to Blockchain. What is it? What are the benefits? And why should you care? Plus, I'll catch up with Kamara Education to hear about their new appeal for support to transform the lives of children, both here at home and abroad. But first, do you have a keyless car? If so, you may want to pay attention. There has been an increase in the number of keyless car thefts in Ireland. So how easy is it to do and what can you do to prevent it? I'm joined now by Sinead McCann of carsireland.ie. Sinead, before we talk about the thefts, explain how exactly the keyless cars work.
Okay, well, Keyless Go is a feature on many modern cars, and it's one that's trickling down to a lot of mainstream models as well. So this isn't a feature that's just on your premium stuff anymore, your Audis, your BMWs. It's on your Nissans, your Skodas, your... And it's a technology that's been there for quite a few years now, so not necessarily brand new cars either. So basically how it works is, instead of having to physically put the key in the ignition or open the car door, your key fob will give off a signal to the car and the car will then open automatically. So it's a very handy feature, very convenient, especially, you know, if you've got your hands full or if it's raining, you want to get into the car as quickly as possible. And likewise then, once you sit into the car, it'll allow you to start the car at the press of a button, which is, you know...
Okay, it's super handy. But so you do have to have this fob or key, like a card, on your person as you approach the car. This strikes me as something that, you know, how often do people leave those in the car or lose them or misplace them? Is it easy? Is it an easy thing to keep track of?
I think you're definitely more likely to leave the key in the car, because the keyless go thing kind of makes you less dependent on it, and there's one less step to getting into the car and starting up. But it is, obviously, you do get used to it.
Okay.
To just, you know, double checking before you leave the car and to take it out of the car with you. And then also it can be one of those things that's quite hard to get used to walk away from your car without locking it, because many of them will just lock on their own. Once the key is out of the vicinity, the car will lock automatically.
You see, I would be freaked out. But again, as I've said a million times on the show, I don't drive. So the notion of doing that, of just walking away from your car and then trusting the technology that it'll lock.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. Like, it's a really difficult one to get used to. And I'm in and out of different cars all the time. And I will always. And you still can. I mean, like, if you want that reassurance of the little click and the beep,
yeah,
you can do it yourself.
Okay. So how is this technology then being abused? And how easily done is it?
So basically, unfortunately, with new technology like this comes new opportunity for thieves. So the problem arises when some criminals, I suppose, have worked out a way to clone the signal that your key fob gives out. So it works, generally it works in a system where they'll work in teams. So it's quite a simple setup. It's basically a signal amplifier and a signal transmitter. So you'll have one person stand outside your house trying to pick up the signal that the key fob is giving out from inside the house. There'll be someone else standing by the car, and...
You're bouncing it on.
Bounce the signal off the other. That tricks the car into thinking that the key is near, and then that person is then free to get into the car, start it up, and unfortunately, in a lot of cases, be gone within seconds.
Okay, so if you're the person that leaves your card for your keyless car on the table inside the front hall or whatever, you're kind of asking for trouble?
You are opening yourself up to a bit of danger there, all right. But that goes across the board. I mean, one good tip for car safety in general is never, ever leave your keys, you know, near windows or doors or anywhere that they're visible, anywhere that they might cause, you know, a temptation for someone to break in. Because, well, this is definitely something to be aware of. Most car theft is still happening via more old-fashioned means, which is people fishing the keys out of letterboxes or, like, breaking a secondary window to grab the keys and run. So definitely storing them away from windows and doors will protect you. Another thing that can help protect from this particular type of crime is storing the keys in a metal box. Or like a biscuit tin is enough to actually block the signal being given out by the key. So it's a very simple, effective method. I've tried it. It works. It's a very easy one to test as well. I mean, just pop the keys in the box, bring the box out near the car, and if it doesn't open, you know, you're safe.
So just have a different place that you dump your keys, basically put it into a biscuit tin.
Yeah, exactly. And I've heard of people storing them in the microwave as well, which will basically
do this. That's an extreme step, yeah.
Not something I'd recommend, especially not if you have... kids, because that could be a whole other expensive problem.
Yeah, exactly. So we don't recommend that.
No.
But in terms of, so what is the range then of the signal from, how far away can you be from the car before the signal kind of cuts out?
Well, see, in general, it'll be, when you think about it, like when you, how far away do you want to be when you can open your car? You're the type of person that approaches your car in the car park and from a few meters back. Sometimes people use it to look for their cars by pressing the button. So most of the time, the range between your car and the driveway and anywhere inside your house is probably close enough.
Okay.
To actually.
So it doesn't have to be like right next to your front door. It can be anywhere. The signal will be available.
Yeah. I mean, well, the further away you can get it, obviously, the better and safer it is. The kind of the.
I suppose the more secure. But it, again, so there's no exact science beyond sticking them in a metal box.
I know. And it sounds pretty old school. Yeah.
And how is this, like, how are the car manufacturers responding to this, or are they responding to this? Because I, and again, I'm not encouraging this, so just covering myself for the News Talk lawyers, but surely this technology that you can buy to amplify and then bounce the signal on is gettable.
Well, this is the thing now. From kind of preliminary research, it's not exactly, you know, you can buy it off Amazon, but as you know yourself, there are areas of the dark web where you can pick up whatever you want.
Yeah.
And it's not that expensive either. So yeah, look, it is definitely something to be aware of. But then again, there are some very simple ways that you can protect yourself from it. And it's the type of crime that once you're aware of, it is quite, you know, there are some kind of more simple.
But are the manufacturers doing anything? Because surely it falls on their desk,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And I mean, there was a study carried out, I think it was a year or two ago, it was carried out in Germany, where, you know, a whole host of cars were tested, and it was a crazy percentage. You're talking about 90% were vulnerable to this. So they obviously, on the back of that, have been working really hard, and there are measures being made. Some of them have kind of released statements saying that if you are really worried about it, you can get the signal turned off in your key fob, if that would make you feel better. Others are developing technology, basically, where if the key has been lying still for too long, it'll no longer give off the signal, which makes sense when you think about it, because, you know, a genuine person is going to lift up their keys before they go out and open.
But that seems like a good fix, because even I'm just thinking of like a very, very fundamental, not quite similar example is, you know, if you turn your Bluetooth on and if other people search in that area, they can see that your Bluetooth is on.
Yeah.
But you get a notification saying somebody wants to send you a file and you can accept or reject it.
Yeah.
So having that, you know, the motion sensor within the key fob that knows it's been idle for 20 minutes, so it's going to shut off the signal.
Yeah.
Surely that would be an easy fix.
I would imagine that would be something that will be probably rolled out.
Yeah.
Next generations of cars going forward. It was BMW and Mercedes, as far as I know, had already implemented it. But, you know, depending on the make and model, I wouldn't take that as gospel for all models across the board. But they are one of the ones that are.
Are there other challenges that are arising as a result of new technology in the cars? Because I have been, like Luca Freilon took me for a spin in one of the Teslas, and I've been in some of the new Audis, and they are packed with technology. You know, the person that I met from Audi was saying that they're more a computer company than a car company at the moment, because there's that level of tech.
Absolutely.
But does that open them up to vulnerabilities then?
A keyless car theft aside, I would say no. I mean, for the most part, new technology has been brilliant in cars. The car safety is unbelievable. The kind of features and the driver assisting aids are taking a lot of the worry out of driving and are kind of making it, making the roads a lot safer, to be honest. And it's not just like old school car safety, where you would just, you know, increase the strength of the chassis to protect against, you know, bangs from the outside. This is stuff like lane departure warning, blind spot monitoring, stuff that kind of will make you more aware and alert as a driver, and to prevent accidents happening in the first place. But I would say, you know, there's been brilliant strides made there.
And so there's no fear factor, and maybe I'm just, you know, being a negative Nelly, but there's no fear factor of those systems being like hacked into or overridden or anything like that. I mean, is that something that, again, is just my Apocalypse Now type brain?
Well, I suppose when you're going that far, you're talking about cars that are, you know, almost or just about autonomous. It's just tech that we can't technically use here just yet because of regulations. So in terms of, like, if we can't use it ourselves, other people to...
They can't manipulate it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would say probably down the line, yeah, look, it's a possibility.
And what are the exciting features that you've seen in new cars recently? Because, as I said, if I could drive, I would absolutely love to get to play with some of them. But you see the press releases coming in and they have these amazing lists of feature that you think, geez, I'd love to have this in my house. It sounds so cool. So what are the new features that are kind of making you sit up and pay attention so far this year?
Absolutely. No, I don't know if you've asked the right person here because I'm a sucker for a gimmick.
Are you? Okay, well, what are the good gimmicks though? Because this is fun.
I do love the type of car. I love the type of feature, especially like when you look at some of the prices of these new cars, generally in the high end of the premium segment, and you look at the price tags and you go, wow. I think you want things to be able to show your friend. Your friend gets in and you're like, look what this car can do.
Yeah.
So stuff like gesture control, you know, higher in the volume with a little kind of twiddle of your finger and, you know, this kind of Matrix style stuff.
Okay.
In the new BMWs. A lot of the new cars now have these Alexa style systems as well, where you don't have to take your eyes off the road. You just can say, hey, BMW, hey, Mercedes, I'm cold. And then they'll ask you, what do you want me to set the temperature to? So it's like having a little personal assistant in
the car. Very cool.
It is. It's awesome.
And that is one of those more expensive sort of add-ons, is it?
It's still in the premium segment at the moment, but okay. It's the type of feature that you can probably see trickling down. I mean, when all the latest smartphones have it, you know, it's more than likely going to trickle down.
Yeah, you see, I love all those. And I do think, you know, sometimes people can write it off as a gimmick, but if you are spending that level of money, you may as well get all the bells and whistles.
Absolutely. And on the more functional features, then I suppose I am a big fan of the safety kit. Like, I think that just, as I was saying earlier, the developments in safety that have come on over the last few years are astounding. The likes of radar-assisted cruise control. So whereby you can get onto the motorway, flick on this active cruise control, which will track the distance from the car in front of you and match the speed exactly so that, you know, your foot off the pedal and you can sit there and know that if that car in front of you slows down, you're going to slow down smoothly at the same distance. If you want to overtake them, you just indicate out. It'll bring you back up to the speed you want to go and bring you back into lane. And it's all just so effortless,
I guess. Do you think, and this is something that I've wondered about before, do you think that we'll need to reimagine the driving test? Because cars are like, they've changed so much and they do so much that if you took your test like 20 years ago, it's completely different. You're driving a different car entirely.
Absolutely. I mean, definitely adaptations will have to be made in the future. There's going to be so much going forward that new drivers just won't have to think about. Even when you look at the kind of the acceleration of switching over to electric and to hybrid systems, which are all automatic, even, you know, the manual gearbox might soon be a thing of the past.
Yeah.
So definitely, and with those added safety features, things like reversing cameras.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not many new cars that you'll sit into now that don't have a reversing camera, to the point where I will admit myself, when I don't have a reversing camera now, I'm like, whoa, that's my reversing mirror. So, you know, the days of kind of reversing around a corner are made much easier by these new cars, and it is tech that's spreading down all the time.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. I'm just waiting for a driverless car that I don't have to do a test for, and then I'll just drive, but not before then, I'd imagine.
Dream.
Exactly. Well, if you want more information, you can check out Cars Ireland. There's tips there as well on how to combat the keyless car theft. But for the moment, Sinead McCann, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jess.
Coming up next, Blockchain 101. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe. Welcome back to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. You've no doubt heard the term blockchain, but do you really know what it is? This week was Blockchain Ireland Week, so there's never been a better time to deep dive into the issue. I'm joined now by Laurie Keogh of Blockchain Ireland and MD of Consensus. Laurie, you're very welcome to the programme. Before we get too deep into all of the issues, maybe just give us the most basic introduction to blockchain.
Sure. And I think there's no reason for people to be afraid or scared of what blockchain is. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't understand it. So in its crudest form, blockchain is a relatively new technology. And what it does is it basically stores transactions in blocks, and all the parties that are involved in that transaction then validate that transaction to say it's true or correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then that transaction is effectively stored. Another block is created, more transactions take place to indicate who owns what and when or how a good was passed from one person to another. And that's then stored in a block of data. It's verified and it's linked to the previous block. And so it goes from block one to block 10,000. And that is effectively why it's called blockchain, chain of blocks. Each block is linked to the previous block. But the real kind of magic as to what it's all about is that it has really for us, four unique characteristics. One of those characteristics on its own is not that powerful, but mm-hmm. when they all come together, that is really when the power of blockchain is unleashed. So what do I mean by this? So one of the key features of the technology is that when you do a transaction using blockchain technology, the transaction is there and is there forever. It's mm-hmm. really hard to amend or alter, so much so that one of the most famous blockchains out there is called the Bitcoin blockchain. It's been around for over 10 years now, and it has not been corrupted or tampered with once in that 10-year period, which is an amazing feat for any technology to say that, especially these days.
Mm-hmm.
So let me explain that in a kind of a common example. So basically, let's say in the aviation sector, we have planes that we use to get from here to Dublin, to London, wherever. And it's really important that we know that those planes were built in a certain way and the parts are actually produced in a certain way. So then it's safe for us to fly.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we track how those parts are made from start to finish, how they're maintained from start to finish? And what blockchain does is it effectively will be that trust machine, as the economist calls blockchain technology, to record exactly how the part was made, how it was maintained, who did what and when. And so then all the parties can effectively see and track that information. Because it's so hard to tamper with or alter anything, it provides that truth, that trust. So immutability is one of those four features. A second feature is a thing called smart contracts. Now, also, let's break that down mm-hmm. and remove all the jargon. So smart contracts are simply self-executing contracts when certain criteria are met. So if this event happens, trigger a payment. In our everyday world, what does that look like? For travel insurance, for example, if you buy travel insurance, typically what you have to do is you go online, you buy it, your flight is delayed more than 8 hours, and then you have to go online, do some homework, and then fill in a form, and then you get some of your money back several weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
That is an okay customer experience. What's a better customer experience is that you go online, you pay for your travel insurance, your flight is delayed more than 8 hours, and that 1 second past 8 hours, the money automatically goes into your bank account. That is a great customer experience. So much so, I'm then curious as to what other products that company who provides it, that service, offers. So that's what a smart contract is, and the applications are endless. If this event happens, trigger that. So whether that is in the legal side or many, many other applications. Another key feature of the technology is that it's decentralized. That's also another term which you may have heard kind of bandied about. But effectively what that means is that no one entity owns the data, which is a big change and a very disruptive component to blockchain technology. So effectively, instead of one company owning all the data, it's actually distributed over many, many, many instances. So let's say if everybody here today in News Talk had a copy of the data set, basically, if I tried to change something, it wouldn't sync up with everybody else's data set. So they'd know I was trying to pull a fast one. So what it does is it provides trust, and it provides also a thing called automated redundancy. Let me break that down. That means that if my data set or computer goes down, I know there are many others that I can refer to and go to as backup. So the Bank of England is really interested in the technology because obviously the Bank of England is a very important part of the UK economy and the world economy. And therefore, they need to be able to have robust backup systems. So they're very interested in the technology based on that. And then the fourth area is all around cryptography. It's very secure. So very, very hard to hack and tamper with. So when you have those four things combined, the technology is really, really disruptive.
So you've said the words like, trust, privacy, security, and that all sounds fantastic. But the word decentralization, as you mentioned there, it does freak people out a little bit. And there is, like, for such a long time, everything has been very linear. Everything that we've done, all of our institutions have been so linear. You know, you want to deposit money, you go to the bank. You want to take your money out, you go to an ATM. And that's just how things are. The notion of it being decentralized and the, you know, where is it? Does it actually exist? And, you know, if the whatever hits the fan, what happens then? You know, they're all the, I think, the uncertainties people have. So how would you address those concerns?
And I think they're all valid, right? Mm-hmm. And regardless of whether it's blockchain or many other applications of technology. And if we look back to big shifts, as you mentioned there, the ATM,
mm-hmm.
if we go back in time and said to some folks, actually, guys, you're not going to go into your bank anymore. There's going to be a hole in the wall and there's a machine which is going to dispense money. They would have said you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the evolution of society and technology in the same way that, you know, we could still be posting letters to one another, but we use email. So this is the big shift that we're seeing. So if we look at the economists saying it's the next internet, for example, I think to answer your question specifically, what I would say is that each individual application of the technology needs to be carefully rolled out by the companies that are using it and by the governments that are using it, whether that's the European Commission, to which they've three substantial projects using the technology, and Ireland has signed up to one of those initiatives. What I would say is that absolutely we have to look at the application of the technology, how we protect the consumer, the citizen, and how, most importantly, they're using the technology because it brings a benefit. And typically what we see is that regulators are involved, and we see lawyers are involved, and we see data protection commissioners being involved. So blockchain technology is working alongside all of those individuals to make sure that it's adding value, but doing it in a safe way.
Okay, so although the decentralization is part of it, it is still regulated. We are still protected. It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to disappear overnight.
What I would say on that is, the technology itself is not being regulated, mm-hmm. because that's not the way regulation works. But the applications of the technology, where if that's in financial services, of course it will be looked at by the regulator to ensure that consumers are protected, that financial oversight is provided, and that economic stability remains. So that's what I'd say. I think with blockchain technology, much like when we go back to the internet, it's an enabling technology to help make our lives better as individuals and citizens, how we can connect better, how we can use services better. I think in time what we will see is we will be using or buying goods and services in different ways than we are now. And people won't know that blockchain is facilitating.
Well, that's what I was going to say. There's a lot of technology. You know, I meet people all the time and they go, oh, I'm not tech savvy at all. And I'm always like, well, if you have a phone, an ATM card, and a Leap card, you're doing pretty well, because that is all like heavy duty technology in the background or in the forefront. Where will, you know, Joe Soap, the consumer, interact with blockchain? And, you know, where are the instances where they may have utilized it and not even know?
Very good question. So far, I think a lot of the applications are more on the business to business side. So a lot of companies have come out and have been looking at this for the last 5 and 6 years, where they're seeing, hold on a second. So blockchain is a technology which enables businesses or individuals to connect on a peer-to-peer basis without going through intermediaries. And that's where the technology came from initially. So without going through a central bank or without going through a government. So therefore, if it has that disintermediating quality, mm-hmm. Some businesses said, well, where does that leave us? Do we become irrelevant? How do we stay relevant? And therefore, they are looking at how to use the technology to provide goods and services where they stay relevant and also generate revenue. So what we would say there is that we have companies like Microsoft, Amazon, JP Morgan, Walmart, and then here in Ireland, the retail banks, some of the government entities are also looking at the technology as to what are the applications that we can roll out.
Mm-hmm.
So to go back to your question specifically, I think in the first instance, it's business to business.
As these things often are.
Yes. And I think a big part of this is also standards are being formed around the technology in order to help, the global adoption of the technology. And that there's been a big, big conference over the past week here in Ireland, the International Standards Organization, Technical Committee 307.
I know. Snappy name.
It rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
But it's actually a really, really big deal. So big shout out to Barry Smith and Mary White from NSAI, the National Standards Association of Ireland, for bringing and convening that group here over the last week, because that's put Ireland on the map in terms of the standards that are being generated for blockchain technology globally.
Mm.
And now Ireland is in the frame for a number of these initiatives, and a number of Irish people have signed up. So B2B to start, I think if we kind of look at what are the applications where the customer will see it, I think one of the big use cases of blockchain technology is all around identity. You mentioned your phone and your Leap card, and then you have perhaps your passport, and then you have your driver's license, and then you have your bank information. Ultimately, what we see increasingly happen and questions that we're asked as consensus is definitely how do we create a digital identity? So therefore, when you go to open a bank account or you move house, and then you have to set up a new utility bill or your new TV service or internet provider, why do I have to keep providing my documents over and over again? Why can't I have all that information digitally, mm-hmm. which I can then share really easily, really quickly, and then I get access to services cheaper, better, faster? And blockchain is something that we and many others really around the world believe that it will facilitate the creation of a safe and easy to use digital identity, which reduces friction to enable people to access goods and services.
Cheaper, better, faster are three words that will probably make people sit up straight away going, whatever it is, I don't care what it is, just bring it to my life. Because I do think, and you know, I've been covering technology for the last like 6 or 7 years, and we're always a bit apprehensive when it comes to stuff, particularly anything that deals with, you know, identity or our money. They're the two things that we really, really care about. But when we see the benefits and when it does make our lives easier, you know, I remember when I first spoke about Revolut and N26 and people were like, oh no, I like my traditional bank, thanks very much. And then you heard that you can do, you know, instant transfers or you can text money, and all of these convenient factors do make people think, oh, okay, well, it's not as scary as I thought because it makes my life that bit easier.
And that is exactly it. And this is why I couldn't agree with you more. And this is where blockchain technology is going, where I think, you know, people don't really talk about how the internet works. Mm-hmm. They just like using and getting the benefits from it. And that's the same progress and journey we're on with blockchain technology. People were really dubious of cloud technology. No, I want to keep my data. I don't want it to go into the cloud. I want to hold on. But now it's probably taken longer than people anticipated, but now we're all using cloud services, whether that be Gmail, including the government here in Ireland. So all these things, people are probably a little skeptical, and mm-hmm. They start to see the advantages, the benefits. Actually, this makes my life easier, and the adoption kicks in. And we're slowly beginning to see that adoption, but it's, as the Americans say, it's like that hockey stick. So we're at the start of that point at which it really kind of launches and goes up into the air, mm-hmm. and adoption starting to kick in. I think when we see, as I mentioned, the likes of Microsoft, Amazon, JP Morgan, the European Commission, all getting behind the technology, I think that's a really, really significant and powerful message.
Absolutely. Tell me a bit about Consensus. What exactly is it that you guys do?
So Consensus is a global blockchain technology company. So we build blockchain-based products for our clients, whether that be the European Commission. So we are the proud strategic partners to the European Commission to advise them on blockchain technology, how to use it, how to inform policy, and how to identify applications that are going to be used across the Eurozone. We also, we are proud to say we're Ireland's largest blockchain technology company. So we're a year old. We have over 45 people here in Ireland, some amazing developers, and we are now becoming the global delivery center for all of Consensus delivery projects. So based on the excellence of the developers and engineers that we have here.
Awesome.
It is. It's really, really exciting. We're based in Ringsend. We're in the Silicon Docks area beside where Google is. And we're really proud. We have a great team of folks who are at the start of this journey about creating awareness around blockchain technology, but also making it real. To kind of burst a myth, we're working on a project where it's called ComGo, K-O-M-G-O, and that is with 10 global banks, so the likes of Citi, Mitsubishi, ING, ABN AMRO, Rabobank, many others around trade finance. And also Shell is involved too. And effectively, that is a way for those entities to trade with one another cheaper, better, faster. But it's the key thing about this is that, A, they're all global brands. And secondly, is that it's live and it's in production. So it's actually happening and they're using it right now. It is a platform for them to help trade with one another cheaper, better, faster. So that's, I think, a really important point. Some people think that blockchain is many years away.
Yeah.
But actually, no, it's in production right now.
And I think that's exciting. And I think this is, as I said, it's something that we've been hearing a lot about. And I do think Bitcoin kind of stole the headlines. And that was, it's going up. Oh, no, it's crashing. And then it's gone again. Do you know what I mean? I think that sort of made the consumer a bit nervous, I think.
Sure. And I think, look, and that's a very important point. And I think you can't have a conversation, to be honest, about blockchain technology without talking about Bitcoin. Bitcoin was the first application of blockchain technology and still is probably the most famous one. And what Bitcoin did is it allowed people to connect on a peer-to-peer basis to transfer value and monetary value. Now, what people realized was, well, actually, can I transfer other methods of value? So can I transfer a share certificate, a barrel of oil, a vote in an election, all electronically, digitally, over the internet, but in a really secure and also in a very transparent way? So basically what people realize is, well, can we do that? And what people found is that Bitcoin is actually quite a hard blockchain to program on. Mm-hmm. So it was like basically developing the internet when you can only do internet banking. So that's not really very, it's a cool application, but it's limiting to only one application. So therefore, a bunch of people came together to develop the Ethereum blockchain. And that's something that Consensus develops upon. And that basically is a programmable blockchain. So if you think of the Bitcoin blockchain as being a pocket calculator, mm-hmm. which in your pocket, which is a really cool thing when it came out first, but then think of the Ethereum blockchain as your iPhone, in which many applications sit on top of your phone. Instead of it just doing one thing, it can do many, many things. And that's where I think that's where people got so excited about blockchain technology and still are, because the best applications are still coming to the fore.
It's very exciting, and I have no doubt this will be the first of many conversations that we are going to have. If people want more information, where's a good place for them to start?
Super, and excellent question. I think from an Irish perspective, the best place to start is blockchainireland.net. So Blockchain Ireland is a government-backed initiative to make Ireland a global blockchain hub and also to create jobs around blockchain technology here in Ireland. And that is definitely the best place to go. So this is an initiative that is backed by the IDA, by Enterprise Ireland, the Department of Finance. We also have a number of other companies at the core of the group that is driving it forward. We've been around for the last 4 years, believe it or not. And this week we just had Blockchain Ireland Week.
Yes, I saw. It was a massive success, right?
Thank you. Yeah, no, it was a lot of hard work from a number of people have made it a success. So we had 51 events between Dublin, Cork, Galway, Limerick and Sligo. The last couple of events are ending up today. We had a great wrap party last night and it was a massive success. This is the first time it happened here in Ireland. And we got huge engagement right across the country from a whole range of different sectors, whether that be financial services, food, supply chain, the government itself, right across. We had 5 tracks with looking at corporates, startups, developers, social impact and design. So I'm already getting asked and we're getting asked. So, Laurie, what's the plan for next year?
Yeah.
And the plan for next year is to go bigger or get bigger and better. Yeah, I think we'll let the dust settle for now on this one, but absolutely, we're already looking forward to next year.
Awesome. Well, congratulations on the success so far, and no doubt we will talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Kamara Education.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. If you want to email the show, you can do so. techtalk@newstalk.com is the email address. And now I'm delighted to be joined once again by Jean Cox-Kearns of Kamara Education. Jean, we had you on the programme, I think it was last year, talking about the work that you do and so on. But if you wouldn't mind, just give us a brief recap of what exactly Kamara Education is and does.
Yeah, so Kamara is all about educational impact. We're working in Ireland, the UK and in 5 Africa countries, 16 years now operating. And our goal is to impact kids, impact the education that's delivered to kids so that you set them up to have just a more successful future.
Which is the nicest mission an organisation can look to have.
Yeah.
And explain to us how exactly you go about that and why you need people to sit up, listen and help out.
Yeah, this is really important at the moment. You know, we have a phenomenal opportunity that's just arrived. So what we do is Kamara, the Kamara model has been to take old IT from companies that they're finished with, and to kind of repurpose that for education use in schools, both in Ireland and also in the 5 Africa countries that we're working in. But then I guess our probably DNA that comes on top of that is the actual training of the teachers. So our goal is to really ramp up and educate the teachers. All of the teachers will go through at minimum 40 hours training with us before they will actually go and use that technology in the classroom. The technology will generally have been kitted out with all of the school curriculum. So we're always fully aligned to the educational curriculum, but with lots of extra things like Wikipedia offline, with education model modules, anything that will help to speed up and improve the educational environment, basically.
And the fact that you've been around for 16 years means that you know what you're doing works and makes a difference.
Yeah, we have educated and impacted now over 3 million kids across the countries that we're working. We've trained over 10,000 teachers, and we have worked in over 1,100 schools. So yes, we're consistently reviewing, we're consistently upgrading, but we pretty much know that our model is having an impact.
And so I think the last time we covered Khmer education, there was an appeal for a computer, like the mouse. You needed some...
That's right.
That's what we were looking for at the time.
Yeah, we needed peripherals. We have a different ask at the moment. We have worked since 2011 with the Ministry of Education in Ethiopia. And the last time I was here, I mentioned Haragwan, who was a student. And, you know, just to retouch on that, Haragwan is a kid that was in a school when UNESCO gave us a little bit of money in 2014 to make a video. And she was one of the pupils in the classroom at that time. She was 14. She spoke Amharic, which is the national language in Ethiopia. And that's the only language she could speak. And she was starting to use a computer for the very first time. Last year in 2018, when we were in Ethiopia, we met up with Haragwan again. And so between 2014 and 18, she had really worked hard in terms of her education and getting used to IT in the classroom. She had won a scholarship from school to go and attend university at the weekends doing coding for a whole year.
Wow.
And last year she finished school and she got her place in university. And Haragwan is now doing computer engineering. And her goal is to set up a business in Ethiopia and create jobs for kids coming out of school by the time she's ready to do that. And, you know, when we met her last year, she stood up and presented to over 1,000 people. She spoke in English and in Amharic. And that just really demonstrates the impact. You know, without those computers, without that education, without that speed up of education, that just wouldn't have happened. So she's
That's
a real
incredible.
Ambassador yeah. for what can happen. And right now, you know, Ethiopia is kind of the fastest growing country in Africa. And, you know, over 40 million Ethiopians are between the ages of 0 and 14. And so education right now is incredibly important. We've worked with the ministry there since 2011. We've just signed an agreement for another 3 years. And so over the next 3 years, we will work in 840 schools, kitting them out with classrooms. We will train another 1,000 teachers, and we'll impact another 695,000 kids in those schools. And our ask is, you know, the interesting thing about this environment and, you know, working as an NGO and a social enterprise is that none of the projects that we get to do are fully funded. So we always have a shortfall. We always have to make up that. And so we're looking for companies, commercial companies in Ireland, to come on board and to be willing to sponsor a school for €5,000. €5,000 will impact over 1,000 kids, educate them and set them up for a future, a really good future where they can effectively compete on the job market with any other kid coming out of a European school.
That's incredible. And €5,000, although it's like a lot of money to an individual, to some of the big companies that we have here in Ireland, even the medium-sized companies we have here in Ireland, that would, like, it may be your CSR budget for the year, but it would, as you say, impact that many children.
Yes, and it might be your CSR budget for the year, but we'll give you a story that you can share and tell and invest in for 3 years, mm-hmm. For €5,000. And if you really can't give us that, then at least right now give us your old IT product, because we obviously need to kit out the classrooms. We need 21,000 computers over the next 3 years. So, you know, our primary ask is to come on board with some funding. But at least come on board with some IT product.
And when you say IT product, so are we talking like desktop PCs and like the mouse, the keyboard, monitors, all of that?
Yeah, we're talking about give us computers, give us monitors and give us notebooks or laptops, whatever your chosen word is.
And if people want to get in touch either with those donations or even to find out more information about how exactly it works or to send in product, what's the best way to get in touch with you guys?
Just www.camara.org, and right there you can get all of the information about the program. You can find out how to contact us, or you can go straight to donate money or equipment on the website.
Brilliant stuff. Well, we will tweet out the link to our previous interview as well if you want to know more about what Camara Education does. But as you said, the website is there if you want any further information. For the moment, thank you so much for coming back into us and best of luck.
Thanks a million.
And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full up on newstalk.com. But don't forget to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And as always, you can drop us an email throughout the week. Techtalk@newstalk.com is the email address. I'll chat to you next week.